What is up, everyone? Welcome back to episode 87 of the Deep Drive podcast. We're recording right after the conclusion of the WBC, so plenty of really exciting baseball that we got to watch. But in this video, we're really focusing on the DH position, which is a very tough position to rank because it's very top-heavy, one and two. You know, what exactly is a DH for every team? You know, there are certain guys who are stuck into the position or locked into the position, and then other guys who just kind of rotate in and out of it. I feel like this is the one position that on a year-to-year basis, you know, you could say is either stacked or just not good enough to even find 10 guys. You know, but with that being said, let's just get right into this list. So we're starting off with what, honorable mentions? I don't even know if we have honorable mentions for this, do we?
Yeah, I mean, we have three guys who got votes who are not on the list in Salvador Perez, Juan Yepes, and Matt Carpenter. I don't think any of those guys are really worthy of a mention. I think this is, like you said, one of those years where it kind of feels like there's too many guys. There's too many spots and not enough guys, right? Like, you know, we're talking about number 10 here. We have Trey Mancini from the Cubs. Like, I don't know if we're like, Trey Mancini is not a good enough baseball player to be a top 10 player at his position. But I mean, the position is just so, you know, bad.
Yeah, and I know that I don't know if this is like bad data or like a misread on StatCast, but I'm pretty sure he had like the hardest hit ball for like in like his last three seasons or something like that with the Cubs in spring training. So at least that's encouraging. But it's just the offense for him hasn't really been consistent over the last few years. So I feel like he's more of like a big home run, big RBI guy with a poor WRC plus, which so on a fantasy basis, maybe he's an attractive player to pick up, but on a like, you know, WRC plus, like per rate base, I feel like the bat isn't enough for me to be happy with the DH position, but maybe he can pick something. Maybe, you know, harder hit balls in spring training are going to correlate to some more success. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like we're just kind of grasping for air here at the bottom of this list. Coming in at number 9, we have Justin Turner, who used to be a superstar, but now he's, you know, kind of just like a modest average baseball player, which is fine. You know, nothing wrong with him, but just, you know, there's not much to talk about here. Justin Turner, you know, he could have a bounce back year, maybe. Like, it's possible, right? But, you know, he's in Boston now for the this is his first year in Boston. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe the ballpark, that's a weird ballpark. So it could help him, could hurt him. I'm not sure. I have no idea. Like, I mean, I feel like once we get to the top of this list, it'll be a lot more interesting to talk about.
Yeah, you know, Boston's weird because, like, I think it has a better run per StatCast. It's a better, like, run factor for right-handed hitters than L.A., but L.A. has a better home run factor for right-handed hitters because of the difference in the Green Monster kind of, like, it gives and takes
away.
Yeah,
it helps you get hits, but it hurts you getting homers.
Right, and, you know, we saw a drop-off in power in terms of the home run department for Turner. You know, he's still someone who was a good hitter last year, but, you know, 123 WRC plus from your third baseman is different than 123 WRC plus from your DH. And it's not like you're projecting that number to get better, right? You know, he's a little bit older. You know, it's not like he went from a bad ballpark for right-handed hitters to a good one. And of course, you know, maybe more DH reps will help him stay healthier. I don't think he's a bad player by any means. I don't think he's like a bad sign. I think he's like kind of a good embodiment of what the Red Sox are this year, which is a lot of like, you know, could go very well, could go very wrong, you know, a lot of variance there. But I think 9's a good spot for him on this list.
Yeah. Coming in at number 8, we have Mitch Garver of the Texas Rangers, who was a top 5 catcher in baseball, you know, only a couple of years removed from that. And here's where we start getting into guys who I think have more upside, right? Like I could see a world where Garver, you know, has another 140, 150 WRC plus season as a DH. Obviously, Jonah Heim is their catcher, but I think Garver will definitely get a lot of ABs, a lot of reps there. So, you know, well, it remains to be seen exactly, you know, what he is. I feel like Garver is one of those guys where you could tell me that everything he did in his career was a complete fluke. That was like, you know, everything that was great he did was a fluke. He really only had like one outstanding year, right, in 2019, and then just had an awful season in 2020. And it's been kind of, you know, iffy since then. He doesn't play much. He's gotten hurt. He's never played over 100. The most he's played in his career is 103 games in 2018. Even the year we were talking about where like he slugged 630 and had a 155 WRC plus, he only played 93 games that year, which obviously as a catcher isn't a huge deal, but as a DH you'd expect him to play more, but even then he hasn't. So I mean, I don't know. I feel like Garver is a guy who we're who'll probably be out of the league in a couple in 2 years.
Yeah, Garver could be out of the league in 2 years, or like, you know, be, I mean, he could get traded at the deadline and be like a serious, like huge offensive acquisition for a team. You know, it's weird because at some point he was like that, like really cool, like really good, like really cool, like analytical pick to be like a top three or four catcher at some point. And you're like, you know, look at this guy. He's become better at framing. And as you mentioned, the offensive production, he's a year removed from being an elite hitter, but again, smaller sample size. You also have to understand that if you play more, it's probably you're probably not going to be able to run into those insane, you know, godly stretches as often. And those kind of get balanced out a little bit more by cold streaks. I think with Turner and Garver, I'm taking the upside with Garver here. I feel like there's that, you know, that outcome of a 135, 140 WRC plus, 120 to 130 games played, just an absolute shit ton of home runs. And not saying Turner, I don't know if that's still in Turner at this point in his career. So that's kind of why I sided Garver here. But I could see if someone prefers the floor, I would take Turner. But, you know, I think that these two guys are pretty interchangeable.
Yeah, I think I would give the edge to Garver by a little bit. Like, I think the age for Turner is starting to become a real concern. He's what, like 37, 38 now. But yeah, I mean, like, they're pretty similar hitters. And I think kind of the bottom of this list, I wouldn't really be surprised if anyone is, you know, changes with anyone else. Juan Yepes, I think, is a guy who's just an honorable mention here, but I would not be shocked if he was like a top five DH in baseball next year. Coming in at number seven, we have Daniel Vogelbach of the Mets. They got him last year, him and Darren Ruff at the deadline, to make a like ultra platoon at DH, and it just blew up in their face. But Vogelbach was not the reason it blew up in their face. It was Darren Ruff, who's, I think, known for reasons that are kind of funny. But yeah, Vogelbach had a good year last year. He had a 144 WRC plus in New York. He's obviously back with the Mets this year. I think with Vogelbach, you kind of know what you're getting, right? Like, you're getting a good bat, but not a great one. And then just absolutely nothing else. Can't run, can't field, but he can hit a little bit. So, and he'll hit some homers like 450 feet. So I guess there's like the cool factor to him too.
Yeah. The plate discipline's really good. As you mentioned, the power is really good. He's also the guy on this list who is not like at an age where you're like worried about serious regression, you know, or doesn't have like an extensive injury history. He hasn't played a lot of games in his career, but you feel like you can kind of pencil him in to play enough games that you put up the production you're looking for. You know, it's weird because Vogelbach is like, as you mentioned, he's like the he's the strong side platoon as a lefty, and Ruff kind of blew up in their plate face. You know, Ruff, I mean, I think we're like, what, a year removed from Ruff kind of being in this conversation. It's like, hey, he's a really good platoon option for a DH spot, and Vogelbach's kind of taking that over. So, I mean, we're still at the part of the list where it's like, you know, I don't really care how you rank these guys. And I think Vogelbach's, he's just not as old as the guys behind him. So that's kind of why I put him, we put him at this spot of the list.
Yeah, coming in at number six, we have JD Martinez of the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I think the difference between seven and six is by far the biggest difference on this list. Maybe like up top you have big ones, but like just like separates the good from the bad, really. Martinez is an elite hitter. And even though he wasn't amazing last year, didn't have a great year, like I just still trust the bat, even at 35, that he can put up a 120 to 125 WRC plus. I don't really care like that his WAR is going to be low. Like it's, he's never going to put up the seasons that he was putting up, you know, in Boston in 2018 or 2019 when, you know, when he was one of the best hitters in the league. But I still think he's, you know, definitely a quality bat to have in your lineup, and you can kind of pencil him in for a 125 WRC plus.
Yeah, I think JD Martinez is interesting because I don't think I'm as high on him as you are, because, you know, the last 2 years haven't been elite. But I do think that he might be someone who benefits from not having to play at Fenway, which is weird. You know, he's someone who really likes hitting. He doesn't hit like a shit ton of fly balls. He's more of a line drive guy. And I feel like pulling your line drives at Boston is worse than pulling your fly balls, you know, especially for how that ballpark plays. Perhaps LA gives him more home runs, and that's kind of what you're really chasing here. I think JD Martinez is someone that, you know, he only hit 16 home runs last year. I think that number is going to, you're going to see an uptick in that number. I know that some Red Sox fans aren't going to be happy that he's ahead of Turner. But the way I look at it is that I think Martinez has a little bit of a higher ceiling. He's a little bit younger. Not a little bit. He's about 3 years younger. I think the ballpark fit is better for him. And, you know, it's we're talking about DH here. Like, if Turner, you told me, was, like, playing third base, like, who would I rather have on my team if I needed, like, if I was just drafting a team for 1 year? I might consider Turner over Martinez just because I know he can play some third base. Martinez can also play some outfield, so I guess that – I don't really know. But third base is a more valuable position, but it's not like Turner's a great defender out there. I know you said you would separate 7 and 6 by a lot. I don't think I would. Personally, I think I'm still kind of in that same tier in my brain. But you know, at the end of the day, I mean, JD Martinez has a very elite pedigree, and I don't think next year is going to be too bad for him.
Yeah, and I think even if you don't separate, you know, 7 and 6, I think you kind of have to separate 6 and 5, right? With William Contreras coming in at number 5 for the Brewers. We're getting the first young guy on this list. We're getting the first, you know, intriguing player on this list who I think has a lot of upside. And obviously last year he just burst out on the scene, 140 WRC plus there, that's rounded, but whatever. Seamer projects him 112. If he catches, he'll be worth a lot more value than anyone like below him. If he doesn't, he'll probably be about the same, maybe like two and a half, three wins. I expect him to play a lot of games. He'll get a lot of reps because the Brewers don't have very many weapons on offense. So I like this fit a lot for him. And I think that he'll do a great job for the Brewers. And I think that they made the right move by, you know, getting him when Atlanta didn't need him when they got Murphy. I think the Brewers are a perfect fit for William Contreras, and I would expect a great year from him next year.
Yeah, he has elite raw power, and I think, you know, projections have his BABIP falling hard. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the BABIP's going to stay pretty high. He hits the ball so hard that you're going to expect him to be a guy with a BABIP well above 300. You know, he whiffs a lot, but again, you don't really care. He walks a good amount and he has crazy power. I think, as you mentioned, that's like a perfect fit for what Milwaukee needed. They don't have a lot of power in that lineup. He's probably their best hitter. Yeah, he's young. He's got upside. Even if he's a 125 to 130 WRC plus hitter next year, I think that's a lot safer than what the other guys below him are. I guess we'll have to wait and see whether Contreras is a guy who can maintain what he did last year, is taking a step back from what he did last year, or even somehow progresses from last year.
And I wouldn't use the word somehow there. I think it's possible. I mean, I don't know what the ceiling is for Contreras. Like, obviously we know he has just elite power, right? And it seemed like his plate discipline wasn't awful. He strikes out a lot, but he also walks a lot. So, he had a really high BABIP, which is a little concerning, but he also has run really high BABIPs throughout his career. Even the minors, he had 358, 321, 336, 351. So it's not like, you know, anything crazy, right? To expect him to put up another near 300, 344 is a little high, but I wouldn't be shocked if he was, you know, close to that once again.
Yeah, I don't really disagree with you here.
Coming in at number 4, we have Giancarlo Stanton of the Yankees. Just 4 across the board. Everyone had him at number 4. And I think that's the perfect spot for him. He's out of all the guys on this list, like, I think you can separate, like, if you were going to tier them off, I'd go, you know, the top 4 are one group, right? And then, you know, Contreras and Martinez are another group, and then everyone else. I think, like, Stanton is firmly up there with the elite DHs.
He's coming off of a down year, but his BABIP was down 100 points. It was like his by far the worst BABIP of his career.
And yeah, that's 100 points. His batting average was down like, you know, 50 points from his career average. I would take everything he did last year with a grain of salt.
Right. And, you know, I will say this, though, you know, obviously health is a factor for him. You know, you're concerned about how many games he's going to give you. But I feel like a lot of guys on this list, you know, don't have a lot of, you know, games played in a season or don't have a very high chance of playing all of their games. You know, I view it as Giancarlo Stanton is, you know, projections love him, which is something that you should note because typically guys coming off of injury and in their 30s are not. You know, those are things that projections do not typically love. He has generational raw power. I think, as you mentioned, 4 is a perfect spot for him. I think he's very clearly like, this is very clearly where he should be. I don't think that, you know, and you could argue anyone below him is better than he is. And I don't think you can argue anyone ahead of him is worse than he is.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think coming into next year, we have Bryce Harper at number three, and I mean Harper's gonna miss half the year already. So, if we're ranking just 2023, you might want to slot Stanton ahead of him. I still think Harper's probably better than, Contreras and Martinez and Vogelback and all them because, of who Bryce Harper is. Like, we're talking about a two-time MVP, we're talking about a future Hall of Famer, a guy who's not a DH, but will be next year because of his injury. But I mean, like, Bryce Harper is a superstar. We're getting into the tier here. These three guys are like perennial MVP candidates, right? And then one of them's a perennial MVP favorite, but we'll get there when we get there. Harper 170 WRC plus 2021 when he won the MVP. And then last year he had another good year. Well, he played at 140 WRC plus a 2.5 WAR. I just, he's only going to play what 70-ish, if even 60, 70 games next year. The Phillies will be great. He'll get a chance in the playoffs again, I'm sure. But at least for the regular season, it's tough to rank him because I don't want to take away from him because of his injury, but I feel like you kind of have to. But then at the same time, I didn't. So, it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm gonna double check this fact because I'm like 95% sure it's true. But despite playing about 99, no, exactly 99 games last year, I think he has the highest WAR amongst any player we've listed so far for the 2022 season. Maybe William Contreras. No, not. I don't think William Contreras got to 2 point. But maybe I could be wrong because I know he caught a little bit. But Harper, as you mentioned, he's just like. He's only three on a DH list because, as you mentioned, he is going to miss half the season. We made this list after we knew that. So,
Well, also, the two guys ahead of him would be ahead of him anyways.
well, I'm saying specifically on a DH list. He would not be on a DH list if not
Oh,
for
okay,
that.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because
Also,
one and two
Contreras is at
are
2.4.
just better players.
Right. Contreras was at 2.4, which is okay. So that's tied with Harper. So Harper played 99 games last year and still, like, he would be, I think, tied for, he would still be like, fourth on this list or third on this list in F 2022 F war. So, and last year was kind of a down year for him, right? I think it was either he started off slow or he slowed down during the year, but it was not a normal Bryce Harper year. I think you can get that WRC plus up. If he gives you a 140 WRC plus and you know he's gonna give you 70 games and then play in the postseason, sure, the war is gonna look beautiful, but you're gonna take that over everyone below him on this list. You're not even gonna think about it because the Phillies are a team that have playoff aspirations. You want Harper for 70 games in the postseason more than you want Harper for 70 games and not knowing about his postseason status. So, I don't think there's not much I have to say. It's Bryce fucking Harper.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with everything you said there. So coming in at number two, we have Shohei Ohtani of the Angels, who, by the way, is the best player in baseball, just not the best designated hitter in baseball because, he also pitches. But we're ranking here solely off of the bat, right? And his bat is among the best in the league. He nearly led the league in homers a couple of years ago when he won the MVP last year. He took a slight step back with the bat, but not by much. And he's put up 8.8 WAR as a designated hitter over the last 2 years, just with the bat, no, like nothing on the mound. And he's projected another 3.5 next year. I think that's probably a little low. The real question with Ohtani coming in to like the last couple years before he broke out like this, and even then it wasn't really a breakout, but before he had these two like massive seasons, like MVP caliber seasons, was whether or not he could stay healthy. And now it doesn't really seem like that's an issue. He played 158 games 2 years ago, 157 last year. That's two, like, those aren't just full seasons, those are like every single game type seasons. And now with the rule change where he can pitch and then DH for the rest of the game, he'll get his 670 plate appearances, 700 plate appearances. We're talking about a full body of work as a pitcher and a full body of work as a hitter, with Ohtani. And then as a hitter, he's got, some of the best raw power we've ever seen, and elite speed, elite hit power, and then like a above average hit tool. Like, he's basically a perfect hitter.
Yeah, so I actually just started a timer. I'm giving myself at most 1 minute to talk about Ohtani because I know I could rant about him forever. As you mentioned, Ohtani, I mean, everything about Ohtani offensively, he has like Giancarlo Stanton like power. He walks at above average clip. He actually cut down his strikeout rate a lot. It was his lowest strikeout rate at any point of any season he had at the major league level. He has ridiculous power. I mean, he's a really good base runner. He's been above average base runner every year of his career. Last year was a down year for the stolen base numbers, but I think bigger bases will give him a, more of a green light. If you are someone who looked at the WBC, who looked at last year, who looked at the year before that and says, you know, people are just really meat riding this Ohtani guy, you're a fucking loser. Ohtani's the best player in baseball. Ohtani's probably the most talented player I've ever watched in any sport in my entire life. He's on a per-rate basis the most talented baseball player to ever fucking play the sport. As you mentioned, he's only not one on this list because we only factor in the bat. Ohtani, I mean, he's special.
All right, and then coming in at number one, we have Yordan Alvarez of the Houston Astros. This is like slam dunk, easy pick for Alvarez. He's probably the best hitter in baseball, maybe him, maybe Trout. Just best pure hitter in baseball. Last year, 185 WRC plus, just when we thought like, oh, maybe he's coming down a little bit. He had a 137 the year before after 177 in his rookie season, and then boom, here we are. A 185 WRC plus in a year where he underperformed his XWOBA by 35 points. I will repeat that. He hit a 185 WRC plus and underperformed his XWOBA by 35 points and had a 6.6 war as a designated hitter. He's probably going to play left field next year, I think. I think we fucked this up too. I'm going to blame Jack. But, like, there's not really much else to say with Alvarez. He's gonna put up a 6.5 win season as a designated hitter or a 7.5 win season as a left fielder.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe him, he's a cold-blooded killer, man. I feel like there's just like certain baseball players that they have that cold-blooded killer aspect to them, and that's Yordan Alvarez. Yordan Alvarez steps to the plate. He's a physically intimidating player. He's 6'5 and just a fucking mammoth of a man. And he can hit a baseball 160 miles an hour. And oh yeah, he strikes out under 20% of the time. And he also has ridiculously good plate discipline. He's going to walk a lot. I'm surprised he doesn't have a 40 home run season yet. And I feel like it's only because of the games played. You mentioned a 6.6 war. Yeah, he did as a DH and he played 135 games and did that. Is health a concern? Sure. But if he can play 150 games, and as you mentioned, he's going to definitely play more left field, even at the very least. I think he'd probably be a primary left fielder. But I mean, good God, this dude is one of the best hitters I've gotten to like appreciate, you know, because I obviously like we grow up watching baseball. I feel like you don't really understand baseball until you're at a certain age. I mean, he's just special, man.
I think the only hitter we've seen who's actually like better than him, like as in our lifetimes, is Mike Trout.
Right, and you know, Judge had the more impressive 2022 season. Yes, but I think there's one big distinct thing here, right? Judge had this crazy 2022 year at his age 30 season, right? We can definitely say that more time at the plate, more time to mature at the major league level gives you an opportunity to correct things. We've seen Alvarez correct his plate discipline. What's to say that 200 WRC plus season isn't there for him? I feel like the next guy that you can reasonably predict to do that is Yordan Alvarez. Like
him or Juan Soto.
Right. It's like, but I feel like with Soto, like the stock for Soto coming off 2022 is down. The stock for Alvarez could not be any higher than it is right now, if you get what I'm saying. So feel like, I don't think we're overreacting here. I feel like, you know, some people overreact to single seasons, but we're not overreacting. I think this is legitimately just like there are so many tangible things that he improved. I was someone who was kind of down on him in 2021. And statistically, what do I have to argue against here? What am I going to say? Like, oh, he's bad at what? You know what I mean? There's nothing he does poorly offensively. So more than deserving of this honor.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can wrap up like the list portion of this now. Let's just talk about it. The World Baseball Classic was electric, right? It was, and maybe it's recency bias, but I think that rivaled the World Series.
I don't think I've ever watched a single better tournament in my life. For baseball. Now, I can't speak to March Madness. I can't speak to any of that stuff. I'm not the most well-versed with college football and all that stuff, but for even I will say, you know, NFL playoffs, NBA playoffs, I've never watched a playoff tournament among those leagues as good as the World Baseball Classic. That Japan-Mexico game is a all-time great game. The game, even the final, right? The final, it kind of feels underwhelming because it came the day after that Japan-Mexico game, but that game was incredible. There were so many big moments in that game. Getting to see Ohtani face Trout. You know, my team, the Dominican Republic, got fucking embarrassed in pool play. But I mean, how am I going to sit here and say that Puerto Rico game was not electric, right? That Christian Vasquez home run was insane. I've never seen Miami, that stadium, look like that in my life.
Venezuela, well, that's also just the Marlins.
Right, but that place was rocking, man. Venezuela, the one run they went on. And that game with the U.S., the Trey Turner Grand Slam, there were so many incredible moments. Australia shocking everyone and getting out of pool play. A lot of people didn't get to see the Italian team because they played at times that, you know, if you're in the U.S., you probably weren't up for that. But they've had some pretty fun games as well. You know, they had some very memorable ones. The Chinese Taipei, some fucking incredible moments. I mean, I think baseball needed this. I think baseball needed an event like this. You know, you just have all your stars playing. I think they needed a Trout-Ohtani matchup was great. I think they had everything that could possibly go right for them. This was a perfect tournament. I think that this does so much good for baseball. And if you think it's a meaningless tournament, you know, obviously, you know, the KFC Barstool tweets are very well documented. Everyone's been clowning on him.
They're kind of funny.
At this point, he's smart for keep tweeting about it because he's going to keep.
Well, it's actually amazing what they're doing. I'm not trying to give him credit for saying the things he said, but it is like they started it, and then the Barstool Baseball account and went and disagreed with it, and then they were just generating so much buzz around him and them arguing with each other, right? Even though they work for the same company, like they.
Well, Carrabas doesn't work with Barstool anymore, but it
wasn't him. It was the. It was like the actual Barstool baseball account.
Oh, right, the actual account, right.
Which used to be the starting nine account, but then they, like, I don't know what's going on there. But all I know is that they were going back and forth with him. And then he went in like that. He got in a huge argument with, who was it? A couple people. I don't know. The whole meaningless games thing, like, I get that these Mets fans are mad. Like, I understand why Mets fans are mad, right? Because you just lost your closer for the entire season. But you can't blame the tournament for that. Like, Diaz was... It's not anyone's fault he got injured, right? It's not the tournament's fault. It's not, you know, the Mets' fault for letting him play. It's not Puerto Rico's fault for letting him play. It's not Diaz's fault for celebrating winning. Like, it's just an accident that happened in the tournament. And you can't take away from that because of it. I think that's right. Especially given like the level of baseball played in that tournament was higher. It was a higher level of baseball than any major league regular season game.
Yeah. I think
multiple all-star teams. The Dominican Republic is an all-star team. Puerto Rico has an all-star team. Venezuela is like Venezuela didn't have either of the Contreras brothers who are both Venezuelan. And I don't know why they didn't, but I think they like you add those two to that team and they probably would have beaten the U.S. Although that 0-2 pitch to Turner was probably the worst pitch I've ever seen in my life. He threw like an 86 mile per hour changeup right down the middle on an 0-2 count.
As you mentioned too, you know, the level of star talent that and dude, the Japanese pitching staff, they weren't just good. They weren't just a good pitching staff. That pitching staff is fucking stacked. They can pull guys out of anywhere that have a 95 mile an hour fastball and with 18 inches of induced vertical break and then a splitter that drops off the table and that's elite vertical separation and get a bunch of swings and misses. Like, they are so loaded. You know, the U.S., I mean, yes, their pitching wasn't, you know, starting pitching wasn't great, but the lineup, man, I mean, good God, dude. They had Pete Alonso on the bench for this fucking game. You know what I mean? Venezuelan, their lineup, you know, their lineup was really damn good. Mexico, Randy Arozarena, man. Okay. At this point, it's not just like a fluke thing, right? The playoff runs are not a fluke thing at this point. He's just a big time player. Like any big time environment, this dude's the best player on the planet. Like I don't even know how to describe. He's so fun. He's fun.
Yeah, I saw you get into it with...
Yeah, I got into it because I said he's a below-average defender and brace runner, which he is. He is. Objectively speaking, he is. A great postseason performer, but he's still both of those things. I'm trying to think. What other players... I'm definitely... Oh my gosh, he plays for the Red Sox. The first base, he played for Taiwan, or Chinese Taipei.
Yu Chang.
Yes, yes, dude. That home run, that grand slam, I think it was that he hit. Good God, that stadium was rocking, man. That stadium was rocking.
Yeah, they love baseball in Taiwan.
Oh yeah,
I had no idea. Like, I didn't know it was such a big deal. Cause like, I think you only really, at least for me, I've really only come to realize that countries like that have, you know, significant MLB talent care about the sport, right? Because like you see teams like, you know, for example, the Korean team has plenty of major league talent on it, right? Like, we've seen Korean guys in the majors put up big numbers, like Hyunjin Ryu, or or G-Man Choi. There's better players that I'm not thinking of, but with Taiwan, it was interesting to watch them because that stadium was going crazy the whole game. And then like the Netherlands was fun at the beginning of the tournament when they beat Cuba, and then they beat, I think, Italy, but then they lost to Taiwan. I don't remember exactly what happened, but those were fun games. Like, just all around, just a great tournament, which culminated in two of the best baseball games I've ever watched the last two nights.
Yeah, I feel like, end of the day, like, this event, I feel like, is only going to get more, like, one big thing that is going to need to change in 2026, or not change, but, like, improve, more U.S. pitchers need to get involved. I think getting more U.S. pitchers involved is just going to make this tournament so much better. You know, teams have to be, not that teams have to be more lax, because you're protecting your investments. You're protecting investments. I 100% understand why teams are, like, nervous about sending their pitchers over.
To me that the major league pitchers, like, major league teams American pitchers had such a big issue with this, but, like, Sandy Alcantara was pitching for the Dominican Republic, and Julio Urias was pitching for Mexico, and Shohei Ohtani
Kershaw wanted to pitch.
Is pitching for Japan, and the Angels let him, and the Marlins let him, and the Dodgers let him. So
what's confusing to me is, like, the Kershaw thing. He didn't have any surgical, like, they didn't have the Dodgers. So there were certain things that you could do if you were on the IL on the last, like, certain stretch of the season, you had surgery, like, the team could block you. What goddamn reason did the Guardians have for blocking Emmanuel Clauseri, or the Dodgers with the Kershaw thing where he had an insurance issue and that's why he couldn't pitch? Are you serious, man? Like, if they cleared him, if the Dodgers are fine with it, if he wants to do it, why am I not, like, I'm probably never going to see Clayton Kershaw pitch in WBC. Clayton Kershaw in the World Baseball Classic would have been fucking awesome, man. No offense to Adam Wainwright. No one wants to see him pitch in the World Baseball Classic. Literally, like, no one. Or Kyle Freeland. No disrespect to Kyle Freeland. Do you want to see Kyle Freeland?
No, full disrespect to
I don't know Kyle Freeland. So I'm not gonna diss him like that. But,
well, not like personally. I'm just saying,
it's,
like,
not, but he fucking, like, stinks.
If we're talking about, like, major league talent, right? Like, Kyle Freeland is not, he's nothing special. Like, he's a quad A player, right?
Right.
He's the guy, and Merrill Kelly, those are the two guys we have for the U.S. when we're facing a Japanese team who's got, you know, Darvish and Ohtani, who they didn't even start, by the way. By the way, the Japanese manager, what's his name?
I don't know his name, but
Hideki Kuriyama, I think.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, Hideki Kuriyama. Just, like, absolute masterclass the last two nights.
The pinch running decision was incredible. I questioned why Ohtani wasn't hitting second, though. That's the one thing. But I guess they play a different style of baseball. It's a different style of baseball. They are a little bit
more.
It's
just an entirely different game, it feels like.
The one thing I'll also say is just, like, for example, even the Mexico-Japan, like, it was Roki Sasaki versus Patrick Sandoval. Patrick Sandoval's not a household name, sure, but he's a really good pitcher. You know what I mean? Like,
I think he will be.
But, like, my point is more so, like, we got to see Yamamoto, Sasaki, Sandoval, and Urquidy all pitch in the same game. Now, Urquidy is obviously the worst pitcher in that group, but, like, he's still a pitcher on the Houston Nationals who's had some success at the major league level. Like,
I mean, he's a guy who was pitching in the World Series last year.
Right. It's like, you know, I get to see, like, dude, I get to see dudes who, like, I want to see. You know what I mean? Like, I get to see dudes who are like, okay, if you say that that's your country's best, like, that there's no shame in that. When you're saying this is my country's best and you're the United States and it's Kyle fucking Freeland, it's not fun to watch, right?
Yeah, like, if you're Mexico and you're saying, like, here, I have, you know, Patrick Sandoval and Julio Urias are my two best pitchers. Like, that, there's nothing to be ashamed of there, right?
Or even, but like, if, Martin Perez. Like, Venezuela had Perez and Lopez. I think that's more than
which fun. I think it's awful that Perez started that game against the
I
US,
do too. But it should have been Lopez. But my point is, like,
or Garcia, or
they were using
else,
Garcia
or,
as a
or Erod team. Or anyone, maybe not Erod, but
my point more so is, like, you can, a lot of these countries that where you would consider lesser than the US at baseball, had those, like, formidable, like, hey, we have this guy, this is our guy, like, or we have two guys at least that are good pitchers, we can trust them, right? Like Perez, I know he melted down against US, but he pitched really well against DR, so I gotta give him props there. But it's like, you know, Japan, they had Sasaki, Yamamoto, Darvish, Ohtani. I mean, they were just like an exception. They had, like, unbelievable starting pitching. But
I mean, yeah,
Cuba,
like, we were talking about this before the tournament, where we were like this team has better pitching than
everyone else.
I mean, it might be the best pitching staff, like,
ever assembled. Yeah,
ever assembled.
I don't disagree. You're not gonna.
I mean, we're looking at guys here who are, I think you could probably argue that there are three top 20 pitchers in the entire world on that pitching staff.
Yeah, Ohtani, Sasaki, or Yamamoto.
And Darvish.
Yeah, Yamamoto. And is Yamamoto, like, not a better pitcher than Sasaki at this, like, right now?
I don't know. Like, it's tough for me to say that because, like, I have really no idea. Like, outside,
I know he's
of
outpitched him in Japan so far, but that's, like, we're going, like, if you're, we're kind of projecting a little bit here, I imagine. And Sasaki is clearly,
yeah,
a
but like
prospect.
there were like legit MLB scouts apparently saying that Sasaki, like, some people think he's could be, you know, one of the best pitchers in the world, if not the best pitcher in the world.
No. I was saying, like, if we're projecting a little bit here, like, I think ranking Sasaki ahead of Yamamoto isn't, like, even though Yamamoto's outpitched him the last 2 years, isn't, like, a dumb idea at all, because Sasaki's fucking 21. And also,
yeah,
on top
but, like,
of that,
you say that, but Yamamoto's 23, so it's really not, like, it's...
Right, no, but it's more so just the experience. Like, Sasaki has, what, 2 or 3 years at the MPB, and Yamamoto's already about to get posted. So, like, I don't know, like, that... Dude, those are four guys, like... I've said this before, not on this podcast, but I've said this, like, before. Yamamoto and Sasaki, if any MLB expansion team started out and those were their top two guys, that's a top 10 1-2 punch in Major League Baseball, no?
Yeah.
Right. Like, and people do not give Japan, the MPB, enough credit. Like, KFC Barstow, I think the worst take he had was that he said that Japan doesn't have a professional league. The MPB is really fucking good. Like,
the MPB is
sorry.
The second best league in the world. It's better than AAA. It's better than college baseball.
Yeah.
It's better than AA. It's better, like, it's...
You can't just put, like, I don't know, Greg Allen in the MPB and think he's going to go out there and dominate. I don't know if he's going to start full-time in the MPB. I don't think he would. And then the pitching, man. It's just, they got arms, bro. I know, obviously, this is a Japanese all-star team, so it's not like every bullpen they have has, you know, a guy throwing 95 with a crazy splitter. But they have a lot of guys who can. And I think that this is a great way to display a lot of international kind of, like, really good talent internationally that aren't major league household names. And I think this tournament was a great way to do that. And I cannot wait for 2026. I cannot wait.
Yeah. I think the next tournament will be more fun, 'cause I think the fact that everybody got so, like, invested in this will make more players want to play. And I think that's the main problem we've seen here, is, like, compared to other, you know, sports and their tournaments like this, like, if you watch Olympic basketball, you know, the U.S. team, LeBron's playing and Damian Lillard's playing and, you know, Stephen Curry's playing. And, you know, like, if you look at the Dream Team, but, like, we've never really seen that fully come together for the U.S. for the World Baseball Classic, but it has fully come together for other countries. The Dominican Republic had their best talent in the world, you know, give or take a few guys. Like, Jose Ramirez didn't play, I know.
Fucking
Class A
Sanchez
didn't play,
man.
But if we're looking at it from, like, a bigger perspective, don't nitpick singular names. We didn't get to see the best team that the U.S. could have put out there. And it's not, and I understand why a guy like Max Scherzer or Justin Verlander wouldn't play because they're 38 years old and they're worried, you know, like about their injuries. But is there any reason why a guy like Corbin Burns isn't out there?
Or like even like getting, I don't even, like, I'm just trying to think of like a roundabout top 30 starter. Like, even if you had one extra top 30 starter alongside, like Lynn, I think is a perfect example of like a good enough pitcher to represent the U.S. in the World Baseball Classic. And you're not like, oh, if only we had, you know what I mean?
Right, like Lance Lynn was by far the best pitcher on that staff. And I know that Nestor Cortez and
Ivaldi.
Clayton Kershaw were both supposed to play. Oh, Andy Ivaldi, yeah, that's three. Three.
That would have been a really good. That would have been more than fine as a rotation.
Yeah, then like that's respectable. It's not Darvish, Sasaki, and Otani, but it's respectable.
I think they
and
win
Yamamoto.
I think they win today if they had that.
I really don't think so. The pitching, like my dad and I were talking about this when we were watching the game. The pitching was not the problem. The U.S. did not lose because they couldn't pitch today. The U.S. lost because they couldn't hit today. They lost 3-2. You give up three runs in a game, you're not saying like, oh, we should have pitched better. You're saying, oh, we should have hit better.
No,
right?
You're not wrong.
And by the way, Otani throwing 100 miles per hour right past Trout twice was fucking sick. He threw it right down the middle. He's like, hit it, and then he couldn't.
Trying to confirm that this is true, but because I was – when you watch the game, it looks like his fastball's cutting. So it might be possible that he was throwing a 100-mile-an-hour cutter, which I want to confirm on like StatCast that the pitch movement lines up with that like visual, like what I saw, because my eye test is, I mean, I wear glasses and I wasn't wearing glasses with this game. Let's see. Wow, this is taking abnormally long. Yeah, because he was throwing fucking gas today. No, okay, he did not throw a single fastball with any cut, but it was close to the zero line of horizontal movement. But still, he was actually getting a lot of backspin. I don't know.
Throw a cutter. Otani does.
But I thought maybe like one of his fastballs were cutting. He had one fastball exactly on the zero line at zero horizontal movement, which would profile a little bit like a cutter. But the thing that was impressive to me was he was throwing sweepers in the mid 80s, and he was also getting fully behind his fastball. Like he threw a fastball just 10 inches of vertical drop, which most people, like Otani changed, like learned the sinker because his four seam fastball isn't supposed to be very good, because of the, like it's a dead zone fastball. I mean, throwing a sweeper at 88.7 miles an hour is fucking ridiculous. I think that last slider he threw to Mike Trout might be the best slider like you could possibly throw in that count. It was a 87 mile.
Oh
per
yeah,
slider.
It was
16 inches of sweep,
perfectly placed.
And you know, it looked like. I know John Smoltz is like not like I don't like John Smoltz, but I think he was right in the sense of like, oh, Otani was just going out there and like, I'm gonna just throw as fucking hard as possible. And that's what I'm gonna do. Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. Like he just went out the bubble. I was like, I'm just gonna throw as hard as possible. I don't care where is it. Like he threw two fastballs right down the middle of the Mike Trout. Right down the middle. That is definitely not where he wanted those fastballs to go. But he's Shohei Ohtani. He's throwing him 100 miles an hour with pretty good backspin. Like, who cares? It doesn't matter. He's just awesome, man. That entire tournament, that was like the perfect way for the tournament to end. Or even, I guess the only other way would have been more perfect is if it was like 2-2 and Mike Trout walked it off or something, but that wasn't possible because it was the top of the ninth and it was a 3-2 game. So,
yeah, or if Mookie Betts didn't completely.
Yeah, Mookie fucking Betts had probably like the worst at bat you could have had there. just strike out, man. Just strike out, dude. I feel like that's like a saying we should normalize. Like, don't ground to double play. Just strike out, man. You know, just take your strikeout, you know? But what a tournament, dude. I don't think there's much else I have to say about it, but that tournament was special.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think we can wrap it up there.
Yeah. If you guys like our content, make sure to give us a good rating and to follow us on our Twitter, on our Instagram. Thank you guys so much for supporting us. We'll see you guys in episode 88. Peace out.